Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsack.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And we are here for a fun adventure through the Star Wars galaxy and the adventures of recording remotely and responsibly. Joseph, we don't want to bore people with our tech issues today. Gardner's arriving. Everything could go wrong, but we're grateful to be here talking with each other and recording.
That is right. I am very glad that CO Bibble is not a member of our little podcast family, because we've had many communication disruptions and he would just be screaming invasion this entire time, this entire afternoon.
Yes, he would. I'm trying to mute my mic, but you can hear I'm broadcasting from Kamino. They say there's a bounty hunter named Jango Fett. Master Sifo Dyas.
It's getting through here to the old folks home. I can hear it.
Is it sliding through, folks? If you're listening, you know we appreciate your support. We are all trying to get through these wild, crazy, scary, confusing times, and you know. But seriously, jokes aside, Joseph, the fact that we're able even to do this, I can see you right now. I can see your face. You can see my face.
Yeah.
We can talk, and a little leaf blower or being locked away is not going to keep us from having fun celebrating Star Wars.
No, and I'm super excited about this episode. This is going to be a very fun episode, and we need fun so much right now.
Fun is a good thing, and in yesterday's Clone Wars report, I apparently got stuck on that word fun. Occasionally, I get stuck on words like hubris, tasty, fun, definitely one of them. And but Star Wars should be fun, and this one, Joseph, today is going to be a we're calling the Q&A Strikes Back. You come up with some you should start writing titles for the Clone Wars, because you've got some great ones coming through. Q&A Strikes Back, indeed. And before we get to that, though, I do want to remind everyone today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, we have our 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Before we do that, as always, we'd like to catch up on life adventures. Like we said up top, we understand, there's a lot of serious things going on. This situation is starting to touch more and more people, even people I know, people you know, Joseph. So we're happy to just celebrate the simple things in life like Star Wars adventures and life adventures. And how has your adventures been?
Good. For Star Wars adventures, I've managed to play a little bit of Battlefront 2, and I did manage to defeat Darth Vader with an Ewok arrow from far away.
Yes.
The Darth Vader seemed very, very upset about that as he slowly kneeled down. Kneel to me, Vader. I'm an Ewok with a bow. Kneel to me. That was very nice. My other Star Wars adventure was just a fun. Hey, look, I'm doing fun's the word of the day. I've been working on some writing and trying to stay focused because I had a writing project that I wanted to work on anyway around this time. And kind of as our big world of self-isolation began, I was having a hard time focusing. So I started a Twitter thread where I'm reporting how far along I am. And one of the things that's been helping me to keep writing is listening to the Solo soundtrack.
Ooh, like that. What made you choose that? Or did you just pop up randomly and the Force took you there?
I get distracted by a lot of the music that I like because it has lyrics, or a ton of my music is, this is the exact album that I listened to obsessively in 2007. And it's like this weird walk down memory lane. In the Solo one, it's just energetic. It's got like a great forward moving. Mm. Look, there are some conflicts, but you're going to make it.
Totally. Oh man, that's got to be great writing music and life music.
Yeah, good driving music, good writing music, good eating a burrito music. You can do anything to the Solo soundtrack.
I love that. You're getting your writing done. You're yub nubbing your way through the galaxy.
That's right. It's all arrows and writing over here. How about you? What are your Star Wars or life adventures?
You know what? As we all find ourselves in lockdown, it's about finding the little things, the little norms, the new norms, and I've been doing that. I did some fun Battlefront and escaping in Star Wars and all those kind of things. I'll tell you what, though, I started doing it on Twitch, on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/catnapsuck there. I have a lot of Lego sets that I haven't built. Most of them Star Wars, not all Star Wars, but most of them Star Wars. So I started doing let's do these Twitch Lego builds. Now, the people listening can't see this, but we're connected by camera right now. I built Obi-Wan's hut, which was a set.
Ooh, nice.
Gifted to me by First Rate Nate, a good fan of the show and a lot of my silly little stupid things that I do. And I built this. And Joseph, I got to tell you this. You need this set. It opens up. I'm showing Joseph.
Oh, it opens.
Yes.
Oh.
And I got,
wow, that is amazing.
I got little Obi-Wan there with a drink. He's got a drink in his hand. Luke's got binoculars. Yes. But there's the chest back here. You open that up, and it's got the lightsaber, a training a ball, and then, of course, it comes with the R2 and then the Tusken Raider figure. And it's so – you look on the box. It's like – I said on the stream yesterday, it's like going to a – a TV set and you watch something on TV for a long time and then you go to a set and you're like, wow, it's Wheel of Fortune's just like a table. this on the box, I thought it was a bigger set. It's so tiny and compact, it can fit on any shelf. And
it's, oh no.
Yeah. And it's priced to go. yeah. So I had a lot of fun doing that, rediscovered my love of Legos, but I just love this hut. It's Obi-Wan's crash pad. And then the international, translations, the different translations. One of them is it's Obi-Wan's hut, but on the box says the other ones. And one of the other choices is El Cabana de Obi-Wan. And I thought, that's what I'm going to call this.
Oh,
that's what it is.
Yeah. It sounds like Obi-Wan's going to have a pool party.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's the Star Wars life adventure that I had this week. On that note,
that is a very beautiful one.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, since you were kindly showing and telling me, I thought we should plug the video that we did.
You, sir, are a professional. Yes. Good transition to Star Wars Show and Tell, which is a new show on our Force Center YouTube channel. This situation is necessity is the mother of invention, and thanks to some of the technologies available now, like StreamYard, Zencaster, though be careful when those things go down suddenly and you can't do your work. Joseph and I came up with this idea right now just he and I, but Jennifer and a special guest will be popping in from time to time of sharing some of the things we love of our Star Wars collections. Joseph, I don't want to spoil if anyone hasn't watched it. Get over there and check it out on our Force Center YouTube channel. But it was nice to see, different. Yours had this great emotional connection to it. Mine had Darth Vader doing something we don't think Darth Vader would do. So that's a good dichotomy.
It made me emotional.
it invoked some emotions. And we're going to keep doing that. You don't necessarily want to commit to weekly, bi-weekly. We're working that out because our schedules are up in the air right now. But it was a lot of fun.
That's right. Yeah, it was very good. It was a great idea of yours, Ken, and it was a super fun to execute. So go check that out on the YouTube channel.
And more things on the way to that YouTube channel, including season 2 of In Memoriam on the way. We're releasing some very brand spanking new ones that never appeared on Spotlight Star Wars that are all brand new, exclusive to YouTube, with our friend Kevin Smith's working on some of the editing there. So with some wonderful housekeeping out of the way, it's time to dive into the news for this week. And we're going to start with a little rumor chasing. But I think it's one of those kind of good rumors, even though it's unconfirmed casting news. And that is Michael Biehn to join The Mandalorian Season 2. Or really, depending on how they shoot things, I'd say he already was in The Mandalorian Season 2. This is a story coming to us from Making Star Wars. They have some great rumor reporting that turns out to be true. They have a good track record in that regard. They also take some big swings, but this one seems like a good safe bet. No info on the role, but interesting point was made in the article that, we've talked about before, but I like there was a highlight on it that this show has done a great job of casting 80s and 90s generation stars. Nick Nolte, Carl Weathers, and now Michael Biehn. Start there, Joseph. Just Michael Biehn himself, what he brings, and this string of casting of stars from another generation.
Yeah, I mean, he fits perfectly with The Mandalorian being grizzled weirdo watch. Not that Michael Biehn is that much of a weirdo. Like, look, he's not Nick Nolte, but when I think, grizzled, brooding man of the 80s who has a problem he needs to take care of, it's Michael Biehn is right up there.
He is an interesting cat, man. I've never met him, don't know him, but I have communicated with his wife, Jennifer Blank Biehn, I believe it is. And they got into, in early part of last decade, they got into like independent movies shot for like $500 over the weekend and just started rolling them out. And so somehow through that, a couple friends of mine were working on them. And he is an interesting cat and fits perfectly into Star Wars, perfectly in what The Mandalorian has already put out there without giving too many plot details for people still catching up to that show. One thing to note here from the article there, I think we'd heard this before. This sounded familiar to me, but the production's code name for Mandalorian Season 2 was Huckleberry, which some people assume is a nod to the 1993 film Tombstone and Val Kilmer as Doc Holliday. Well, of course, Michael Biehn played Johnny Ringo in that film. So does this, Joseph, just confirm that this is a Western in space?
Yes, I think it confirms that it's a Western in space and the exact age of Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni that they have this specific taste in actors and movies.
Yeah, definitely there. The article also kind of quietly said that Bill Burr would be possibly back, or his character, his Boston space smuggler, back in Star Wars there. So that could lead you to think of some certain plot things there. Do you have any other performers that you'd still like to see show up in Mandalorian that would fit, whether from this 80s, 90s action era or just this continuing the line of the old grizzled weirdos?
Yeah. I went down a Terminator rabbit hole and I was like, oh, well, you know, if you're going to have Michael Biehn, let's get Linda Hamilton in there. You know, she was in the most recent Terminator movie. She is looking ready to fight and be an action star. And then when I was like, Linda Hamilton, right? And I just Googled to just make sure I wasn't having a brain fart. Like that's the actor's name of Sarah Connor, right? And then I remembered all of the other women who have played Sarah Connor.
Yeah.
It, of course, includes Emilia Clarke and then Lena Headey in the TV show, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. So I'm pitching that all three of them need to be in Mandalorian Season 3.
Oh, beautiful. So are you suggesting an older, wiser Kira shows back up and some henchwomen at her side?
Yeah, that's right. I think Kira's back with two other Sarah Connors.
Ooh, I'm all for this. Lena Headey in Star Wars, Linda Hamilton, these are good calls. I would, everyone always gravitates to, you know, I'd love Charles Dance and Star, you know, Liam Cunningham, but Lena Headey in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like a Sith Lord or something, or a Pirate Queen. I'm all for that.
Oh yeah, Pirate Queen all the way. Only other 80s thing, it's a little bit different than the kind of grizzled man, although that is what he's become. But I love Kiefer Sutherland. I would love Kiefer Sutherland in Star Wars. I'd love a little Jack Bauer in space.
I like that idea. I like that idea a lot. I was going towards one of my, you know, speaking of Westerns, going to my two favorite movies, even above Star Wars of all time, Young Guns and Young Guns 2. Half kidding, I think. I could go for some Emilio Estevez in Star Wars. Kiefer, Doc Scurlock, Josiah Doc Scurlock would be good too. Those are some good choices. Lou Diamond Phillips.
Who else you got?
Lou Diamond Phillips.
Oh, yeah.
Give me Lou Diamond Phillips, man. I'd like him to be... If he's a Mandalorian, you know, again, not going too specific, but I'd like him to be one of those complicated. He's done some bad things, but much like, you know, some of our heroes in Star Wars, has to rise above that. And maybe there's some reasons for it. And maybe has a turn of heart, you know,
that sounds perfect. That sounds beautiful.
Always going to root for Lou Diamond Phillips. So
I think you got it. The entire cast of Young Guns in The Mandalorian.
Casey Zemesko, Dermot Mulroney. We got them all. We got them all. Ancient gang, Dave. Next headline. This one's. I put this in here. I say it was slower news week, but we always end up talking about a lot of things. But this one got me excited. But it's always also, I don't know, burst into the seams with ideas. But also, man, someone else is going to take this, and what am I going to do? You've heard me talk about it before, but it's time to get pod racing again. StarWars.com was the one that really kind of led this report here, that the classic 90s game, Padra, the Episode 1 Racer, is coming to PS4 and the Nintendo Switch. I got to be honest with you, I got to check up here. I didn't get a release date on it because that would be an important bit of information for all of us right now. This is a re-release. It's a classic game, but it's a twist, modern controls, and it'll look, I'm sure, a lot better. 25 player playable races, 8 worlds, pit droids, and this one I really love, Joseph, split screen for multiplayer action. So, yeah, let's start there. Where's your excitement? Because I know you're like me, man. This is probably why we're connected forever in Star Wars. We just love pod racers and the stories around them. And the game itself, what's your overall view on this news bite?
Yeah, no, it's great. It's very, very exciting. I do have a Nintendo Switch, but I can barely keep up with Battlefront 2, but I might fire up the Switch in order to get the old pod racing game going. You know, I want to be Rats Tyrell, you know, and have him. Then I don't feel guilty when he dies because it's narratively accurate, you know.
Rats is growing in stature. Yeah, this is exciting news for me. And I have on my PS4, I have the Racer's Revenge. I think I bought for like $10. They redid that game. It was that weird sequel we always talk about where teenage Anakin's coming back for revenge on Sebulba, which is a Star Wars story I do want to see. What do you think now, as we stand in 2020, what's the appeal of just pod racing and the pod racing sequence? Because maybe it's just me and maybe it's just us, but to me, it seems like this is growing. There's more and more people like, ooh, pod racing. Yes, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I think, you know, being of the generation that we were, pod racing is one of the many things that people kvetched about Phantom Menace, that it's too long, there's not enough tension. And I think a lot of that has just drifted away. So the people who enjoy it are louder. And I think there's an element of nostalgia, you know, particularly with this game. Like, I didn't even have this game because I already had an N64, but I had like a couple different sets of friends who bought the N64 that was packaged with this game. And it was the first game of the new era of Star Wars that the prequels were bringing. And I sat and played this game with people who didn't like the movie, who were disappointed by the movie, but were still like, I don't care. It's Star Wars. And I think that the power of that nostalgia from people who were, you know, that age when it came out, then you combine that with people who are like, I'm 5 years old. I love The Phantom Menace. Jar Jar's the best. And so is pod racing. And this game is amazing. You know, combine the energy of all those people. That's a powerful bit of Star Wars nostalgia joy.
Well said, because it comes from all different points. And I love that. As this continues to grow, and this is where I've talked about it before, we get off asked a lot, hey, if you were to create a Star Wars video game, now it's gotten to the point where, Joseph, I just think we start looking for who we know that can help us create this game and sell this to all the powers that be. I really want a realistic, straightforward, yet fun and silly pod racing game where I can, much like my franchise mode on MLB The Show, I can hire a racer, upgrade my pod, win, work your way up to Sebulba, whatever you got to do, keep it relatively in canon as best you can. I'm not super lost on that, stuck on that, but just I want to be a pod race owner. I want that feeling.
Yeah. That makes so much sense. And I think maybe that's a part of the power of it, is because we get to see the cool race of the actual pod race. But because we're all caught up in the mechanics of the behind the scenes of it, it feels like a real sport in Star Wars world.
Exactly. And I knew about it. We've talked about it. But in rewatching some of the Clone Wars episodes to get ready for this new season and just going back to that little episode, that little moment of just, you know, young adult Anakin kind of sitting in his bedroom with a pod racing poster behind him. I was like, why this should be talked about a lot more in Star Wars. This should be celebrated to the high heavens. So we'll update you when it comes out, and then I'm sure I'll have it and I'll be playing it online and offline with friends and foes alike. Next story here. This one, I got to admit, kind of slipped under the radar when I was digging up the news for this week. I'm happy to read it. This is MovieWeb. I interviewed Neil Scanlan. Of course, we know all his work with the creatures and everything in this modern Star Wars era. And the headline is Cassian Andor series and Disney Plus Star Wars shows, a place for, quote, unused characters. Scanlan said a couple things I thought were interesting here. The first one here, Joseph, we'll dive into. He said the process on these shows, so far that working on Cassian Andor and any, you know, Mandalorian, we know, and any other one, Kenobi and any other shows in development, even things we don't know about. He says the process is no different than working on the movies, saying there's no compromises made. What do you think about that statement? I thought that was really good.
I think that's really great from Neil Scanlan's perspective on creatures, right? Because for the most part, he is making physical, actual costumes and puppets and things that exist in the physical world, which, you know, obviously The Mandalorian is shooting to be Star Wars immersive, but they're using all of this different technology for it. Neil Scanlan's somebody who is making physical objects. So that's really cool to hear that. Yep. We can go in our volume and create different environments, but Neil's still making weird pig creatures.
Weird pig creatures, a staple in Star Wars. Yeah. And I love this idea. Just, you know, not that we thought this even after watching Mandalorian, season one, budget constraints or not, that popped up every now and then. It felt like Star Wars, and it had the effect on fans around the globe. Well, those who could see it legally. And you could tell it just a lot of Star Wars love into it, but to know that even behind the scenes, no one's working on something going, well, it's just Star Wars TV. They're in it. No compromises.
Right.
I love that. He went on to say, this is kind of the meat of the article here. It says some characters, my characters, I generally mean creature-based characters, the weird pig creatures. Some characters previously designed and not used or used very little in some of the movies will appear in this show, Cassian Andor, and others is with question mark is something I put in there, but will appear in this show in a more, quote, integrated way. So I, again, love this. We see this a lot, concepts, unused concepts, concepts that evolve over time, and you go back to the original ones and use them for another character even. But the fact that, Joseph, he's kind of specifically saying, now, characters that are even already out there that you might have seen will be used a little bit more in the forefront, I think that's exciting for Star Wars fans like us who love a show like Data Bank Brawl.
Yes. It's for anybody who loves the weird creatures. And I think what he's saying, if I'm reading between the lines correctly, is things like Canto Bight, where, you know, we saw on the behind the scenes, it got to see a lot of those weirdos up close in the way the actual film ended up being edited together, that you maybe see them just a bit or not at all.
Right.
So I'm hoping for things like Neeper's pan pick, the detective guy with the big eyes and the constantly open mouth, Kedpin Shacklop, who got entirely cut from the film. Mm. But there's that whole story about him in the Canto Bight book. He is the pig, the little pink,
little weird pig pink creature.
Yeah. I think he's cut entirely. He might be in one or two little passing things, but
yeah,
in the actual film. But he's, you know, there's the great deleted scenes of him. But even I was really struck by the Rise of Skywalker bonus features that had in Ithorian at the Aki Aki Festival, who, if they're in the film, I haven't seen that Ithorian. So that made me really excited for, like, is it something like, well, we've got a really great functional Ithorian, and that could be a character that Cassian actually, like, interacts with and has a conversation with. That would be awesome.
That would be great. Yeah, some other many choices to have. I would love, especially as it relates to Cassian Andor series, and we know timeline-wise it could be different, but I think, you know, he's going to be aware of the Partisans and everything. So give me Moroff. Give me, in honor of Jennifer, give me Bistan. give me Idrio Benthic Two Tubes. You know, get to see them more in a upfront, exciting role. We talk often about Infus Nest, but what about Weasel? You know, just Warwick himself is a straight humanoid type character in Star Wars. That's exciting me. Then on the other end, I'm thinking silly stuff like, I mean, the Neeper's panpick film noir that we need is definitely on there. But like, hey, you know what? Give me the Kenobi series and have a Monoman.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Give me some crazy stuff like that and have it work. And again, not just be passing, but just have the character now become something. That's interesting to me.
Yeah. Sit down and have a drink with Obi-Wan Kenobi and a Monoman.
I know our friend of the show, Van William, would be very excited. One of his favorite characters of all time. So we'll see what that actually means. You know, sometimes I temper my excitement. You know, I don't think there's going to be a Moroff standalone episode in Cassian Andor series, but, you know, maybe a few good moments with him. We'll see. Final one here. We just kind of almost wanted to follow up because I think we addressed it. I know last week some people wrote us specifically and said, hey, here's some of the stuff that came out. This is from Ashley Eckstein. We talked about a lot about last week about the rumored live action casting of Rosario Dawson and maybe Ashley's response. So this is This is her statement here. I'll read it in full for anyone who missed it. Last week, I'm not going to do it in her voice. She's got a great voice, though. Last week, a rumor was released about Ahsoka Tano being in season 2 of The Mandalorian. I've read all of your questions and comments about the story, and thank you for your patience as I've taken the much-needed time to sort through these questions. The truth is, I am not involved in The Mandalorian. I can't answer questions for something I've not been a part of. I am an actress and have performed in all types of mediums, live action, film, television, theater, voiceover, hosting, and it's been my dream for 14 years to continue to play Ahsoka Tano in all forms. I will continue to be grateful for opportunities to help create stories for Ahsoka Tano, and I'm always happy to see her legacy continue. I am only one member of a tremendously talented team of people that it takes to bring Ahsoka Tano to life. The final decisions for Ahsoka are not mine to make, and I cannot comment on something I truly know nothing about. So that's the statement. Nothing new since then, either in the official news or what we learned from the stories last week. Nothing more from Ashley, on at least on that big of a scale. So Joseph, thoughts on that official comment? Some would say some non-confirmation on some of the stories from Ashley Eckstein.
I think it is really well written by Ashley Eckstein. I think it is very honest from just a real practical standpoint of if she's getting lots of questions from fans of, hey, what's going on? I think one of the primary messages that comes out of that for me is, thank you for the kind messages. I truly have no answers because I don't know them at all. So I think that's good. I think it's it has such a positive tone, is particularly saying that I'm not the only one who creates Ahsoka, and I'm excited for the character to go on. So those are the two big, I think, positive messages. I think there is also a not entirely subtle, this is a bummer. There's nothing I can do about it. I need some space, man.
Yeah.
I'm laughing so I don't cry. I really feel for her, because I feel like in particular things like, including I'm an actor. I've done all sorts of things like live action. I want to be involved with her in all forms. Decisions for Ahsoka are not mine to make. I feel like she is really taking the high road in trying to not rain on anybody's parade, but also say, I am capable of playing Ahsoka live. I would have loved to play Ahsoka live. It's not my choice. I can't make it happen. Thank you for the kind words, fans.
Well said. Well said. I don't think I have any tremendously different or newer insights into the comment more than what you said there, because the sense of frustration, but it's handled with it's definitely in that stay luminous lane. And she has done a lot, and that's, I've always understood that myself, but just the reality of the situation, I just, again, personally never thought she'd be considered, just because of a lot of reasons how things work, good and bad, and a lot of it frustrating, most of it frustrating, especially for someone like her, who, as we said before, helped create this character, part of a great team. Glad she gave the credit there, but this isn't just, she didn't just slide into the booth of a character already existing. She molded it in very much her image, and that's where a lot of the frustrations of the fans are felt. So I felt great that she reached out, acknowledged it. But like you said, I'm going to go away for a little bit.
Yeah. This is what I got. One thing that did come up that I saw this morning is that apparently Filoni changed his Twitter header image to a very Mandalorian end credit style image of Ahsoka with the white hood riding a space creature with old man Rex.
Yes. Oh, he hasn't tweeted in a while, because I was like, I follow him. How come I didn't see it? Yeah. And so this photo has existed before, right? This is not too brand new, but the fact that he changed it back might be the big question, right? I think I've seen, I mean, I don't know. At this point, I might be thinking of Lord of the Rings, too, for all I know. You're watching a lot of that lately. So Dave loves this stuff. He loves doing this. He loves this, Joseph. What do you think about this?
I think if Dave Filoni could get away with doing a press release by making reporters go to an escape room, he would do that. He loves just sort of poking in puzzles and changing shirts mid-panel and things like that, right? But it does seem to me, one of our questions coming up in Q&A is about this, so I won't go on. But it does seem like, why would he tease you know, he knows the conversation that's going on right now. So would he really put that there just to tease people if Ahsoka and possibly Rex are not involved?
I mean, yeah. It's like if he, even with that picture he did, you know, with Ahsoka and Gandalf, and that one, it's funny, he felt like he had to kind of comment on it, be like, you know, sorry, I think I just ruffled up some feathers. I'm paraphrasing, but you know what I mean? Like he's very aware. He's very savvy. He's very cheeky. So you're right. This would be one step too far. Like if he did that, and it's nothing. If I was Jon Favreau, I'd grab him by the scruff of his neck, sit him down, and be like, "You can't do this to me. You can't do this to me."
Yeah, this is serious. We have a protocol. All information goes out on my Instagram. Yeah, says Jon Favreau.
Final note on that, though, because this has been kind of going around. I'm glad you brought it up. I have never considered that Rex would show up. Never thought about that. And now I am super intrigued.
I am very intrigued too, but it immediately begins the casting questions.
Yeah.
Right. Because we're in the middle of this with Ahsoka. Mm-hmm. Ahsoka is a very unique thing because unlike lots of actors combining to play characters, so far she is Ahsoka. There hasn't been anybody else. So it's this new thing. Yeah. And then with Rex, you get into this really weird thing of like, well, if he's willing to grow a beard, it should be Temuera Morrison, because that's the point, is he's a clone of Temuera Morrison.
You're saying it couldn't be D. Bradley Baker. Oh, interesting.
I know. And that even that's controversial, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And that's why someone have a get an eye on Temuera and see what kind of beard he has right now. Not that you couldn't put one on for a production, but you're dancing. That's interesting ground. You know, you're right. And I think if you're gonna do it, you got to do it, and it's got to be Temuera Morrison. He's perfect. He's I think perfect age now, and he's a dude in great shape, kind of like Rex, an old guy in the gym still. You know, I never thought to think of it. Now I'm thinking about it. I can't unthink it, and I want it.
Oh, it would be so good. It feels like Old Man Rex fits the vibe of Mandalorian, right?
Yes. Yes. Our grizzled weirdos. He's a grizzled weirdo indeed. So we'll update you on all of that there. A lot going on in Star Wars news. Before we get to our main topic and take a break, we want to do what we always do here, which is say Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us.
That is right. We are recommending the same book that we recommended last week because it is the biggest thing going in Star Wars novelizations right now, and that is the novelization of The Rise of Skywalker by Rae Carson. I think it's a great read if you're somebody who loved Rise of Skywalker, and I think it's a great read / listen if you're somebody who's like, ooh, I like parts of it, but I have questions about others. It's a good book kind of for wherever you are on the Rise of Skywalker gamut.
Absolutely. Joseph is right. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter, and get your free audiobook on us. I love that novel. I might just read it again. So coming up soon on the other side of this break, the Q&A strikes back. We are going to hear from you with your questions all through the show. And hopefully we have the answers you want to hear. Stick around. We'll be right back here on ForceCenter.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare.
That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome back to Force Center. This is Joseph Scrimshaw here with a quick correction. Later on in this episode, we read A Great Power of the Light Side. That is our segment where we ask patrons to send in something about Star Wars that they really love, and then we share it. This week, we have a great one, but during the episode, as you will hear, I accidentally say the wrong name. This is an error that happens to us sometimes as humans called cut and paste. I accidentally left the name of the person who submitted a Power of the Light Side for last week in for this week, so I wanted to correct that. The Power of the Light Side that you will hear later in the show was sent in by Andrew Siner. So Andrew, it's a great Power of the Light Side. Thank you so much for sending it in, and my apologies for that mix-up. Listeners, when you hear that later in the episode, you are hearing the words and the thoughts of Andrew Siner. Thank you, and now back to your regularly scheduled Force Center.
Welcome back here to Force Center. It's episode 215. Numbers, you know, they come and go, Joseph, but we've been around the block for a while, and we appreciate all of our fans and keep us afloat. We're grizzled weirdos, too.
Yeah, I like that our numbers are going just up. Yeah.
Oh.
Up, up, up the numbers instead of out of order. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Though there was housekeeping note too. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts Mobile, there's a category issue where some of our issues are showing up classified. So if you don't subscribe to us, which, hey, always you should give us a subscription on Apple if you want. But if you don't, some of the episodes, current ones, are found way down below in the unknown seasons, like the unknown regions. But they exist. It's just there. Ran into that one this week, thanks to, I think, Edgar, our fan, who tweeted that out. So, Joseph, speaking of fans, this week's show, we haven't done this in a while. We always take questions from our listeners each episode, but this one is entirely questions from the fans.
Yeah, that is right. So we put out a call for questions on our Patreon, as we always do, and Twitter, and we got a lot in, over a whole different spectrum of kinds of questions, so I thought it'd be fun to take some time and dig in. The first one is from Callum Stone Street, and Callum says, if you could create a sport in Star Wars, what would it be?
So we talked a lot about pod racing, so we're going to have to take that answer off the board, right? That's too obvious. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I think this is a new sport. You are, between the two of us, far more sports knowledgeable than myself.
I had a lot of alone time as a kid, so I could like a ton of things. It sounds like you were more functional than I. many nights looking at baseball cards and Star Wars figures. So I want some kind of form of space baseball.
Okay.
Maybe even not lightsabers, but like the same kind of technology that goes into, like the Magna Guard's staffs, the electro staffs. Ooh. Some kind of fancy
filaments.
A filament bat. There you go. Some sort of form of space ball. Copyright issues with Mel Brooks aside. I want something like that, and perhaps there already is, but I just teams. You get a lot of kids collecting things from them. Just my love of baseball. I want to see it represented in Star Wars.
So let me ask you about the essence of baseball versus the essence of Star Wars. So correct me if I'm wrong. One of the joys of baseball is that in immaculately played game, not much will happen, right? Because the pitcher will do an excellent job. And there won't be much hitting or running.
See,
is that fair?
You've watched a lot of Minnesota Twins games growing up, I think. Yes, a good Frank Viola 1-1, 1-0 game over the Tigers is what you want. Yeah, I enjoy a good home run slugfest. I'm sure the fans in the Galaxy would too. But yeah, you'd have to have some kind of droid pitcher or something like that.
I did have a home run hanky from when the Twins won.
You had a homer hanky? Oh wow!
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. Good times. So do you think that matches with Star Wars to have a game where is it like a real peaceful Jedi version of baseball where the ideal thing is that nothing happens?
I think so. It's not nothing big happens, but literally giant important decisions are made with every play, right? So that's very Jedi-like.
Yeah.
You hope you don't want a war, but you know how to get out of one if you get into one. You hope.
I like that. I like that Mace would have a philosophy of ideally this will be a calm game, but if not, I can hit that ball very, very far.
Yeah, and much like Jedi fighting stances, a good batting stance is unique and represents the player's style, much like a Jedi fighting style. So yeah, it tracks even in that direction too.
Nice. The game, I don't have it all worked out, but the name of the Star Wars sport that I would like would be called Rail Ball. And it would be called rail ball because it would be played on lots of very high platforms that don't actually have rails. There's a little bit of irony in the title.
I love that. Good scaffold match from the old wrestling days. Yes. High up.
Yeah.
Ability, chances of falling high. Yep.
Yeah. I was just trying to imagine like if you actually saw it in a movie and you saw like Han Solo playing a sport, what would be cool? I mean, like, well, if it's really, really high up, maybe you fall and you land on some sort of a grav mat or whatever.
Right.
And I would also think that like there would be like special platforms that you could jump off of the main railless platform. You could jump on the special platform and grab a blaster and it would be on like stun or sting or whatever.
Ooh,
but like blasters would actually be a part of the sport.
Is it almost like biathlon where you're skiing and then you're skeet shooting? You know, it's like you're doing all of that So, you know, you drop down, you have to target practice, and you jump up to another level. And you don't fall off the rails. And the whole time you got to maybe carry a ball, a rail ball. So if you drop it, your team loses a point.
Yeah, yeah. I think when I think about it, really, I think I was thinking about a basic kind of football, soccer, even a hockey. You're trying to get your thing in the opponent's other end, but it's all happening on dangerous rails, and you can shoot one another with blasters.
I think that's the goal of life. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And put some stun gun blasters into it. And the lack of rails. It's purely Star Wars. It's the essence of Star Wars is in your game. So I like this.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Let's move on to the next question. This comes from Cookbook 500. Cookbook 500 says, I need a little Star Wars counseling. I love that Rey says she is Rey Skywalker at the end of Rise of Skywalker, but the lady who asks her who she is, what is she doing walking her space camel in the middle of nowhere? In canon, I still don't think we know that lady's name. We know this space camel, a camel from the Star Wars novelization, the Rise of Skywalker novelization, is an Itobi. So,
right. All right. This is a great question.
So what is your thought? What do you think the lady with the Itobi is doing so close to the old Lars homestead?
I'll be honest with you. I think she's been scoping it out, trying to buy it for a while. She's a shrewd businesswoman, and I think she's upset. This is the day she was like, I'm going to go really take a look at it, see if I can get a hold of it. And then that's also part of the question of who are you? Like, are you live here? You own, like, you just passing by because maybe I can buy it from her, or maybe I need to outbid her. I don't know the system there. The important thing is I just love this question, because as much as I love that ending, as much as I love the decision behind it and have come to accept it, not just accept it, but just really embrace it. And we've talked about it. I got to admit, there's a weird beat, and I wish there was about 2 seconds less of a beat with that conversation. And I just do think it's weird. How long was that lady standing there?
Yeah, I mean, there's a pretty open horizon. So Rey was very focused on what she was doing. While this lady, unless the Itobi runs really fast, but still, you think you'd hear that.
Yeah, and so, you know, for those who think I look at all this with rose-colored glasses, I do want to know what Rey was thinking. Just ignore her until the lady said something? I don't know, but it's a good question. But that's my thought. That's my thought of what she might have been doing there.
Okay, I think that's pretty good. Scoping it out for real estate reasons. Yeah, I love this question. I love the look of the Itobi. I love this woman. I love the quality of the way she says, there's been no one for so long. It is, to me, a great classic Star Wars line, because it is literally like, yes, this property has been vacant. But it's just got that much more romantic, poetic, almost melancholy. There's been no one for so long. It makes you feel like she's talking about the Jedi and hope, as well as, nobody's lived here for a while. So I love this scene. Grant, it is, you know, amazing that she manages to sneak up on the Jedi Rey Skywalker. But here's my pitch for what she's actually doing. Okay. We hear in Attack of the Clones that when Shmi was sadly abducted by the Tusken Raiders, it's because she's out collecting the mushrooms that grow on the evaporators. I think since the Lars homestead is all decrepit, a bunch of mushrooms and other delicious fungi grow there. And I think she was out picking fungus from the Lars evaporators and homestead.
A plethora of fungi available to her. Love that decision.
That's right. Yeah. I think that makes sense for my own headcanon, but I think it would have been weird if she's like, I'm picking mushrooms. Who are you?
I love that. I love that. And the later self is great. It's, you know, storms are coming, Annie. We got traditions of old ladies asking questions or having great insights in Star Wars on Tatooine. So I'm good with that there. I like that. Cookbook 500. Good question.
Yeah, moving on to Max Fozzie. We got a lot of great names here today. Max Fozzie, that's a Twitter handle. Max Fozzie asks, what happened to Luke's green saber? And do you think there are any plans for a Luke Skywalker series or movie in the near future? Ken, what do you think?
Oh, that's the last part of that. I just don't. animated or otherwise, maybe we get some comic stuff. You know, I love the amount of Luke we got in that Kylo Ren, Rise of Kylo Ren comic series we talked about in last week's main show. So I don't know, part of that question, as much as we've talked about that going back to even the Force Awakens days of the Lor San Tekka and Luke traveling the galaxy. Now Luke and Lando, I'd love that. So Max Fazzi, I don't know about that. As far as the lightsaber, to the best of my knowledge, Joseph, I do believe, isn't it in the gift shop, the Lost and Found over at Octo, right?
Yeah, it's implied pretty heavily in the Last Jedi novelization that the caretakers have it packed away with the rest of Luke's stuff.
Yeah, and that they have collected quite a few things over the years of other adventurous Jedi journeys, journeymen and women who have come to the island seeking something. So a little gift shop, Lost and Found.
Yeah. Yeah, a little lost and found. It's basically them saying, hey, Jedi who come here, don't be litter bugs. Pick up after yourself. I remember really, really liking that detail from the Last Jedi novelization because, you know, those of us who love that green saber to know that it does still exist and it could show up again someday in future canon. And to the second half of Max's question, I agree with you. I think that there isn't going to be certainly not a movie, probably not a series in the near future. I think partially just because there seems to be a desire to give the original trilogy characters a break and some space.
Yeah.
That said, I would really love there to be some more Luke Skywalker adventures while Mark Hamill is willing to voice him in take advantage of the fact that he is not only Luke Skywalker, he's one of the greatest voice actors of our generation. I would love, even if it was just like, hey, we're going to do a one-off animated movie or we're going to do a one-off audiobook adventure. It doesn't even need to be a four-season animated series. It could just be some little adventure that's meant to be, this is not the next big thing in Star Wars, but just, we have this great character. We have some time where he is a fully fledged Jedi master with Jedi students going out, having adventures like him encountering the Knights of Ren that we saw in that comic book. You got Mark Hamill. I would love there to be some, not a series or a movie, but one little adventure, one little self-contained adventure, one little series of self-contained adventures.
Love that idea. Love that thought. And I do agree that the idea of this, the legacy characters getting a little bit of a break, which I'm okay with for a lot of different reasons, but I'm definitely okay with, because I couldn't take the barrage of clickbait articles of, they said Skywalker saga was dead, now Luke's got a comic book. Like, just give me a couple months without that. But here's one thought as I was thinking here. You're a published playwright, Joseph. you're a published playwright.
Yes.
I would love to see a one-man play of Luke on Octo leading up to the moment he tries to destroy the temple, and that's where when Rey, he can't do it, and that's when he goes to the top of the hill and Rey finds him. I would love to see it. I would love to see it. Luke alone with his thoughts and the Force haunting him in dreams. Give me a play down at the Pantages here with Mark Hamill.
Oh, man, I would love that. Yeah, Mark Hamill is an accomplished theater actor as well. I see this immediately as a sort of a Waiting for Godot thing, but Luke is not waiting for Godot. Luke is waiting for himself.
Yes.
To fully get, make the decision to burn that Unetti tree down and burn the Jedi legacy with it. He could talk to the caretakers. That would be great. It'd be basically... a two-person show, except for one person would just be dressed as a caretaker, and Luke would deliver almost all of his dialogue to the caretaker.
Love that. And a thalassiren, just like a set piece of a thalassiren, just kind of be good.
Yeah. Snorting and sneezing every once in a while as a punctuation. Yeah.
The crowd would have to, there's a splash zone. It'd be good.
This thing sells itself. Doesn't write itself, but it sells itself. All right. Any other thoughts on this? The great question of more Skywalker?
No, I do hope we get some more Luke, Max, though. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Moving on to Gunther Mertens. Gunther asks, would 10 minutes extra in The Rise of Skywalker have solved the Palpatine crawl? For example, if you started with a sort of flashback to the moment Snoke is cut in half, then you cut to Palpatine being torn out of meditation with a shock, proving he puppeteered Snoke all along. Good, Ben. Good, Gunther writes.
That's awesome. That's really good, Gunther. I like that a lot. I think one of the things that comes to mind, Joseph, and I think I'm sure you'd agree, even if that scene, this is a really fun scene. This is a fun idea. Then you'd have people wanting 10 more minutes to explain, well, how did Palpatine, was he meditating or is he sleeping? We need to know. We have a checklist of things we need from these movies. So yeah, I'll start there. I don't know what you think, but I'll start there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to start by sharing an opinion and getting your take on it, Ken. Okay. So you and I have talked about, I think, for ourselves that we're okay with Palpatine the way he is in the movie. You've been saying this in a really eloquent way lately that you don't care about the what and the how, you care about the why. Mm. And we get the why of Palpatine. We know the why of Palpatine. So that's the way I feel, but it clearly distracts a lot of people, takes them out of the movie, sets them off in a sort of a cynical mindset from the beginning of the movie because they feel like it's unearned. Mm. Given that that is clearly the, even though you and I are fine with it, clearly a lot of people are really bothered by it. Do you consider it a flaw? Do you think just by the fact that it takes a lot of people out of the movie that they should have spent some time explaining how Palpatine returned at the top of the movie?
I can get behind that thought because clearly I think a lot of people wanted to be taken out by it going into the movie.
Yeah.
With arms crossed. You better give me all the details of how Palpatine came back. So there's that one thing that Ian McDiarmid said at a convention the week all the Palpatine was a clone stories came out of the early release of the novel or the early samples of the novel. And he said that there was a line of Kylo saying you're a clone. And he says, not quite, well, I forget exactly, but not quite a clone, but something more, whatever it is. Some kind of hint.
Yeah. More than a clone, less than a man, something like that.
That's the one. Ding, ding, ding. That's the line. That's one of those things of much like give me that moment that was cut out of Luke crying in his hut a little bit over learning that Han's dead. I can get behind the pacing of some of the edits and the decisions in these edits and all these movies. I can understand that. But as a fan, it's just like, hey, if I'd seen Luke, you know, maybe that would have given some people some pause before just dumping fire, criticism fire on the movies. So there are people always going to find something. But yeah, that when I heard that line, that made some sense to me. Like, yeah. All right, give some folks that. I think there's still going to be a ton of questions, even when the answers are obvious. Beaumont Kin is a walking answer book. Kylo looks at clone chambers, but not to go down that path. Try to keep it positive. Yeah. So, yeah, I will concede that. Give me a little bit more. And this, Gunther's got, this is a great scene. I got to say, I like it.
Yeah, I like it. It's fun in a great way to just like show the direct relationship between Palpatine and Snoke. I think the thing for me when I really try to put on my writer hat and my Star Wars fan hat at the same time and say, yeah, I would love to see more Palpatine. If a few extra minutes would have cleared things up for a lot of people, that would be awesome. But then my mind goes to how do you make it not just exposition, not just, hey, here is my PowerPoint presentation on how to survive death as a Sith Lord.
Right.
So I wonder about a scene where Palpatine could have described his conquering of death to Kylo as a power that he dangles in front of Kylo of like, and I could teach you this too, if you do as I ask. Because I think about if you get the information about how Palpatine survived out there, how do you make it a conflict or a dynamic between him and Kylo and not just him giving a lecture on the 101s of cheating death.
Oh yeah. It's a great point. And also, you know, flashbacks are great. Flashbacks can be wonderful, but also, you know, it's kind of drilled into your head early on in writing. You don't want to rely on that. You don't want to use that. You want to tell the story as best you can in the present. And I believe have fun with it, go crazy, be artistic. So I'm not putting the kibosh on flashbacks, but like, let's say you start the movie with Vader throwing Palpatine over, and you follow him down the chamber, and then poof, next you know, you cut to Exegol, and poof, the spirit shows up there, right? There's the answer, right? That's what he did. That's what we did. Yeah. That's what we now know. He studied Plagueis. He learned it. That's what the power was. You would have all the think pieces again. Well, okay, he learned it from Plagueis. How did he learn it from Plagueis? When did he learn it? What did he exactly learn? That's where I think it's just an ever-ending cycle of repeating. But I like what you're saying, and I agree. You know, again, when this becomes when a lot of people have this question, it's understandable that maybe one more line or two would have been needed.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was just picturing if the movie had really been structured to show you the end of Return of the Jedi and then show Palpatine, you know, the Force projecting his spirit into a clone, and I can imagine the jokes of, you know, the movie freezes just as Palpatine is about to hit the bottom of that shaft. And then you've got Sheev going, yep, that's me, record squad.
That's awesome. That's hilarious.
No, I kind of want to see it. But you're right. People would have been upset about that. So it's an interesting challenge. It'll be a Star Wars thing that is debated for years to come. But I agree. Gunther has a visually really arresting and fun idea of a way to show that.
Really like that. Really like
All right. Moving on to our next question. Dan X. Brophy. Dan X. Brophy says, symbolically, what do you think JJ was trying to represent with Rey's yellow blade at the end of The Rise of Skywalker?
Yeah, so definitely fair to say yellow. I know, doesn't the book refer to as white gold or white and gold, I think? I'm trying to remember. Don't have it around me. But let's just say yellow. Yeah. I mean, I remember you talked about it first on the review, just the idea that we all know the Jedi Temple Guards, protecting the knowledge, protecting the legacy. So that's, to me, the easiest thing. I would be convinced that Chris Terrio understands that, that's what those blades mean. JJ, I don't know. He's a fan. He's definitely a fan. He's definitely aware of the shows now more than I thought, even from some of his comments. But I could see that being the actual reason, an actual reason. But what do you think there? You kind of already discussed it, I thought, in another episode, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think for the kind of deeper Star Wars nerd, the fact that it is the same as the Jedi Temple Guard does just immediately make your mind go to, Rey's responsibility is defending the legacy of the Jedi. But I think, I don't know if JJ is going to be thinking in those terms. So to me, it's just the sequel in Rey's journey has been about, you know, finding out who you are while also learning from the past. And in that, why I love that scene is she's not like, yep, and now I have two lightsabers. I combine Luke and Leia's, and now that's my saber staff. The idea was so about, I respect Luke and Leia. They've taught me everything they know, but they are of the past, and now I will move forward into the future. And I think the lightsaber being not only made of her staff, but a different color. You even flick the button in a different direction than you usually see. It's just to just visually say immediately, Rey loves her mentors. She's learned from them, but she is going out on her own new path. And this is a new blade. There's no confusing it with a major blade you've seen in the Skywalker saga on film.
Absolutely. The line starts with her now. You know what I mean? The hero blade is now this one, and we're starting out all over again, and it could get passed on. This blade, we got to imagine at some point, will get passed on, but it's hers.
Yeah. Did that work on you just emotionally? Because I know it worked on me just seeing, like, it would have been cool if it was her staff in a green lightsaber or a purple lightsaber, but the fact that it was yellow, and it's known in deep Star Wars canon, but not visually on screen in the Skywalker saga, that it was brand new, really added the emotion to me of she is set to begin her journey.
It really did. The entire sequence did. The construction of the blade out of her past out of her, the weapon of her past, and so again, paying homage to what came before, to the skills she had before, to what she learned, to all the pain, the suffering, but put it into something new and starting from again. Yeah, it absolutely worked. And then again, just on the that Star Wars nerd level, like, oh, yellow. It works on a lot of levels.
Yeah, very powerful. So we're going to move on to Patreon questions. Do you want to take these?
Absolutely will, sir. Patreon we go. Simon Huffnagel. So it was back in 2017, Marvel put out a Mace Windu comic miniseries. The full title of that series was Star Wars Jedi of the Republic Mace Windu, which implied to me that Marvel intended to publish more miniseries about other Jedi under the Jedi of the Republic banner. My question is, if Marvel ever decides to do that, which Jedi would you like to see a series made for? My picks would either be Kit Fisto or Depa Malaba, the master of Kanan Jarrus, as we know. Caleb Doom. So this is great. I love, and that Mace series is underrated. I thought I get overlooked a little bit. There's some great stuff, great ties to Revenge of the Sith. So Joseph, your thoughts on this idea that maybe there could have been more, or should there be more, and then the Jedis you'd like to see?
Yeah, I would love that. I really, as a comic book reader, I like the 5-issue just miniseries that they were doing, because you can really just kind of pick them up and grab them, and it's not as much work as keeping track of the monthly, and they can really focus in on telling like this specific event, this specific emotion or challenge of a character. And I like that Mace one. I got to reread it because I read it real fast late at night. So I got to reread it. But for me, I would love some more 5-issue Jedi arcs. Terra Sanube. Mm-hmm. I know I always go on about Terra Sanube. Weird old Jedi who's got the lightsaber cane, but in episode kind of building off of his big appearance in the Clone Wars of Lightsaber Lost, yeah, where he is reflecting on what the Jedi have been, in that he is a Jedi, is getting old. He is gonna pass away naturally, it feels like, soon. And how does he feel about the end of his life being this time of great change for the galaxy and the Jedi? You know, does it make him feel like, hey, life goes in cycles and now is my time? Or does he really feel like, I wish I wasn't old, I have so much to do?
Yeah, I like that idea a lot. You know, plus it would just shine light on a great Jedi character that needs love. I tell you what, you need to just pitch this.
I'll get pitching.
Get pitching indeed. Any other Jedi of choice?
I would also be interested in Ki-Adi Mundi.
Yes.
And I have not read a bunch of the, pre-Disney canon. So I know that there are tons of adventures with Ki-Adi Mundi. I'm not super familiar with him. I know some of our listeners are. But for the Ki-Adi Mundi that I know in the movies, who is often wrong, it would be fun to have a miniseries about. Let's spend time with a Jedi who is just wrong and is just not as worried as we, the audience, know he should be.
I love this idea of, yes, that's a great idea. That's an awesome idea. The wrongs of Mundi.
The many mistakes of Ki-Adi Mundi.
Many mistakes of Ki-Adi Mundi, indeed.
How about you? What do you got?
Yeah, Ki-Adi Mundi was going to be my list too, just because he's one of those. He's prominent. You know, he's so prominent in the prequel series. He is not just a little background. And, you know, we could answer our Yaddles. We could answer Oparensis. He's all those kind of Jarl Poof, all those kind of Jedi we love to mention. But Ki-Adi Mundi's front and center. Yeah, he's in a lot of the Clone Wars stuff, Clone Wars series. But, like, he's in the spotlight would be really interesting to me. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on his name. The Jedi from Fallen Order, the one whose holocron you're following around.
Yes. Not Cal Kestis, but the mentor.
The mentor, yeah. Not Seer, her order. And I cannot believe that I'm joining.
Not Seer Junda, but the other one that we both really like. Eno.
Oh, my God. What?
Cordova. Eno Cordova.
Oh, my God. You know, I liked that game. I didn't love it, but I thought I really remembered him. Yes, Cordova, Master Cordova. He's just so interesting to me. He is an interesting Jedi, and how his goals are research and education and historian. So give me, and he was already featured, I understand, featured very prominently in the Fallen Order comic series.
Yes.
But give me more with him, a little younger, a little more in action, maybe before he's training Seer or when he first gets Seer. I would be interested in that. And then I think the final one, we get a lot of him in Dooku Jedi Lost, but he's such a mysterious character. Sifo Dyas, just a little bit more. Ooh. Into what, I don't know, maybe we go into him actually going to Kamino. I don't know. Just get some of the bigger answers from this character.
Oh yeah. I like that a lot. And I like the portrayal of his character of being tortured by visions. That would be really fun to spend time with. Yeah. I got one other idea, which would be, I would love a Luminara Unduli maybe coping with what happened to Barriss Offee.
I like that.
That seems like that would be a good way to play with lots of, you know, master and apprentice relationships. Clearly something went wrong there between Luminara and Barriss, and diving into what if or what it is would be awesome.
Well, Simon, you got us thinking. So great question. Jay Winkworth asks this. I realize that it's not a studio or filmmaker's job to debunk rumors or third party scoops about their projects, but let's use the recent Rosario Dawson Ahsoka Tano reports as an example. If it's not true, is it in Lucasfilm's best interest to shoot it down so that people aren't just waiting all season for something that never happens? I remember Dave Filoni did this once in regards to Krennic when he, after it was mentioned in a Rebels teaser trailer, fans assumed he was showing up that season. Filoni said he didn't want fans waiting for something that wasn't happening. A little bit of a different circumstance there. Just wanted to hear your opinions on the matter. Thank you and take care. Thank you, Jay. This is, and we talked about Filoni in the news segment here, Joseph. This is a great question. I really like where Jay's coming from here. And you going back to your days of, I just wish Lucasfilm Disney would go have an event like Marvel does and just put all the information out there that they know. We get things change. We all get things change. How they get the news out sometimes deserves to be questioned.
Yeah. And this one is particularly interesting because these Rosario Dawson Ahsoka rumors are very plentiful. It's not about something that's going to happen in the future. The shooting of season two appears to be complete. It's been confirmed a bunch of places. So I totally get what Jay is saying. And I tend to agree that if the answer is no, they should just come out and say no. But they're in this little bit of a trap, because if they say no to things that are definitely not happening, then anytime they don't say no, everyone will take that as a yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
It's a yes. Trap.
I refer everyone to Matt Smith saying, no, I'm not in Star Wars.
Yeah.
And he's not. And look, there, that's why I saw his name on some things too. You know, maybe we'll get the whole story one day, but his plain and simple denial became story after story and conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory, which sometimes it's just fun. Yeah. I think you are the same mind. It's an interesting time. It's a tough time, where news is just 12 second cycles and things get out a lot more than they used to. And you didn't need to do this. And sometimes it's just kind of maybe an old school approach of like, no, we'll announce it with the show. And you have to adjust. And I totally get why they wouldn't want to be like, yeah, one of the big surprises upcoming is this, and everyone, the scoops are right. It's dangerous because then it starts giving power to those leaks and those sources and everything like that. Word's going to get out. You know, you and I have talked often about how you could be in a cafe having coffee with your agent. You hear everything you need to hear. So I get it. It's a touchy game. I just think sometimes getting ahead of it when it's too far out of the barn, you know, it's good to try to get ahead of it, but it might be damned if you do, damned if you don't.
And there might be a wrinkle to this Ahsoka thing, to Jay's point. If she's not in it, then, you know, it will be a bummer for a lot of people who think that she is and Lucasfilm to have not quashed it. But there might be some wrinkle to it. Maybe she's literally in the background for fun. you know, right. Or maybe her scene is literally 30 seconds long and they don't want to come out and go, yeah, yeah, she's in it. And then have everybody explode, do months of podcasts. And then.
My big question is, does she have spurs on her boots now? That might be a connection. We'll see. Not to get too spoilery there. Jay, thank you for that one there. A lot there. Carry on, Spike. Great ship. Great name. Great question. Which Star Wars characters would be best and worst to be quarantined with during space COVID-19? So let's blow off some steam. It's a stressful situation out in the world. I think it's okay to just kind of occasionally kick your heels up and have some fun with the situation we're all in here, Joseph. We always think of who do you want in your cockpit in Star Wars? So who would you want with you, and who would you definitely not want with you?
Yeah, you know, sometimes with these kind of fun who would you want questions, you know, I want to go obscure or weird or fun, but what honestly came to my heart is I would want to be in self-isolation with Obi-Wan Kenobi. I feel like he'd certainly follow the rules, right? He would stay 6 feet away from me. Even if we were isolated in his tiny, tiny Lego hut that you recently built. He's a guy that you can just sit there and be quiet with, right?
Yep.
But he's also a guy who's got interesting stories. He is curious about other people. So like all the people in Star Wars that you would just have to like be with for a long time, my mind always goes to, I like Obi-Wan because the chatter would be interesting, but you could also have some quiet time.
Yes, that's key to this, right? So as far as who I want, runner-up might be Lobot. Because we could chat, he'll never really get too involved. You know, it's a quiet conversation, but also he's going to go isolate pretty easily. And if not, I can just probably press some buttons on my space watch and he'll follow my lead. I'm going to go a little outside the box here. I'm going to go Boba Fett. For best. Boba Fett is already used to kind of running by himself. And if we're stuck together, he'll probably keep to himself as best he can, follow the rules from a different point of view. He's got a mask, he's got gloves, and he doesn't take them off. If we're stuck in Slave One, tiny ship, cramped quarters, but at least there's some room. It's a good ship, and it's a good ship with some reputation. You can just kind of go get supplies you need, you know?
Yeah.
I might go with Boba Fett. Wouldn't be my first choice for a lot of things, but I was just thinking about it. I'll go with that.
Yeah, no, I get it. The not taking the mask off, that's important, that's vital.
Worst ones for you.
Worst, the worst ones, you know, I thought of a couple options, but the one that really stuck in my mind is, I think the worst is Borgullet.
Oh, yeah, no.
I don't know if fair to call Borgullet a character, but I just pictured, like, what character doesn't seem willing to keep their distance at all? And that's definitely boar wrap you in its tentacles, Gullet.
That's a great answer, because Jabba was maybe on my list too, just because I'm sure he already has something that I don't want. My worst, and this is not a reflection on the character. This is to answer the question. I might go with, I mean, it's close, but I might go with L337.
Oh,
because I think this is a resourceful droid. I love Phoebe Waller-Bridge. I love L3. But there'd be a lot of, I can't believe we're in this situation. Oh, why we're here? And you just be like, hey, quiet it down. We are where we are. Oh, yeah, yeah. I think after a while that would get to me. You know, 3PO, similar to, I don't want to out droids here, but like K2SO maybe, but. I'll just go L3. I'll say L3.
Okay.
Though L3,
I think that's a,
yeah, L3 could pilot the ship and I'll sit in the back.
Okay. I think that's a very, very good choice.
Hopefully we're not in this situation, but great question. Carry on, Spike. Robert Meadows writes, how do you think Jango Fett, speaking of Fett, would have reacted to seeing his clones in action? Unfortunately, Fett dies before the clones come in to save the day during the Battle of Geonosis. So this is interesting, Joseph, because you can approach this in many different ways. Number one, just the question of, hey, you know, he's proud. My clones will do their job. But that job and what that job is, you know, I don't know if he intended it to be quote unquote for good. So what do you think here about Django and his legacy?
Yeah, I think he would be proud because I think that he does show that pride when he's talking to Obi-Wan of they'll do their job. So I think he would be proud to see them, you know, coming in and blowing those droids away. I doubt Django has any great like loyalty or affinity to, you know, the rest of the separatist leaders. This is a job for him. But I think he'd still also feel a little superior because, you know, he wanted the one unaltered clone for his son. And I think he prides himself on his own creativity, right? Yeah. And I think the clones at Geonosis haven't had a lot of experience yet to develop that personality and that creativity. So I think he'd be like, yep, they're doing their job. It's very impressive. They're not as good as me, though.
Yeah, great point, because I think later on in the war, you know, I think he'd just feel real competitive. Bad Batch shows up or something like that, or even Rex, Cody, any Fives, any of the ones we love, right? He'd just be like, whoa, you think you're better than me? Like, he'd want, you're right. He'd want the early where the clones are trying to figure themselves out. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. But it's a great question.
At some point, he would just see the galaxy, if he had lived deep into the Clone Wars, that the galaxy is full of resentful children.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd have that look. You're not even thankful that I exist.
Yeah.
You know, and there's something to say about him kind of, you know, his loyalties lie to the highest bidder. And all right, the Republic, whatever, they're doing good. That's fine by me. So not my war, he might say.
Yeah.
But good Django thoughts, Robert Meadows. Let's go into the mind of Django Fett. Final question of the day. Then we're going to go to our Power of the Light Side segment here. Spencer Wakefield says, hey, one question that lingered with me after my final theatrical viewing of The Rise of Skywalker. Did Ben Solo die a Jedi? I think the simple answer is yes, especially now knowing more details from The Rise of Kylo Ren comics and how much he had trained with Luke prior to his fall and comparing him to Vader / Anakin's return to the light. But I think there's a lot of wrinkles that could complicate the answer, and I could think of no one better to dive into them than the Force Center crew. Yeah, this is getting deep to close out the questions here, Joseph. Definitely some redemption. Definitely a feeling that he's still around, even if he doesn't show up for the family photo at the end. So the Force might have something to say on it there. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such a fun question to ponder because it goes to the question of like, well, what makes you a Jedi?
Yeah.
And in particular, outside of the kind of structure that had developed towards the end of the Republic era, before the dark times, before the Empire, that they had, here are these benchmarks, and you become a Padawan, and then you become you pass trials, and you become a Jedi Knight. And absent of that, what makes you a Jedi? And Luke kind of gets in my opinion, my reading of Return of the Jedi is that conversation with Yoda on Yoda's deathbed, where Luke says that I am a Jedi, and Yoda's got that great, oh, and he says, no, one thing's remained. Vader, you must face Vader. I've kind of taken that as Yoda improvising a moral test for Luke to, Luke's got the skills. He has the power, but how you handle this conflict with your father is that you fear is going to be your trials. And of course, Luke comes through that with flying colors. And I feel like that's kind of being, that's what's being played with Rey, is Luke just saying, you know, it is the destiny of a Jedi to confront fear. And that's really what Jedi trials are about. Not, do you know all the lightsaber forms? Not, can you name all the texts? You know, can you lift this, this heavy of a rock? It's, can you hold in your soul the ideal of what it is to be a Jedi? And Rey puts herself through that test. And I think that Kylo does too. And for me, like some of the parts of that is a willingness to act, right? To stand up and do something, but having a purity of heart that you're acting in defense, that you're not being aggressive, that you're not being selfish, to be selfless, and more than anything, to face your fear and not being be held back by your fear. And I think if you start to break all those things down, you can have a really fun conversation of did Kylo do those things? Mm. And if he succeeded, did he pass his improvised trial and not only return to the light, but become a Jedi Knight?
Great stuff, sir. Great stuff. And my of all the things, great things you said, I'm focusing on this selflessness and giving up of himself and this idea that Kylo Ben leaves and heads towards Exegol, not concerned with the results, just concerned of why he has to do it. And that's, there's no selfishness there. He's not there to be like, I'm going to go help her, and then she's going to smooch me, and then I'm going to be good, and then I defeat Palpatine. He just knows he needs to go. He needs to go. And that is an act of bravery, but again, an act of selflessness. Confronting the fear is such a great thing. Yeah, the Jedi trials, to me, my loose interpretation of them, my loose understanding of what they always have meant is, yeah, exactly that. Go kind of finding yourself, conquering any fears or problems, stuff. Even the Kyber crystal stuff, the gathering stuff. It's pretty dark at times to me at some point, you know. You got to be open to some of these things, got to be open to the calls. So, yeah, I agree with you there. There's a lot there, and that was his, to me, his final test, confronting that fear and giving up his desires, just using himself and his powers, actually probably just using them, you know, for good, yes, but you know what I mean? Just going off and not worried about what happens, just worried that you need to do it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I think that I love what you're saying, and in the way it's written in the Rise of Skywalker novelization, that there's just a need to act to help Rey, that he is there to be there for Rey and help her face her fear, you know, and for somebody like Kylo, who has, you know, been afraid of being rejected, afraid of being alone, afraid of facing sort of legacy and paternal figures. There's lots of his fears that he's just putting to a side and saying, I need to be there for Rey. And I think that Ben Solo definitely, he certainly disappears in the Force, but I think he dies a Jedi Knight.
I like that answer from, you know, we're not the experts here. We're not the official final word of what this might be. So we'll wait for George Lucas to tell us all. Spencer, though, great question. Great question. And I don't even know if we're done talking about the journey of Kylo Ren and Ben Solo. There's just so much there that I just love, just even revisiting things we've discussed before about the character. It's quite a journey. So that is the end of our fan questions. The Q&A strikes back. Joseph, we're going to be doing this from time to time again down the line. And we're getting some of those calls coming in on Anchor from the Anchor app. We'll start integrating some of those where we record remotely, and it becomes easier to do right now. One of the benefits, look on the bright side of having to record under different circumstances. So thank you all for submitting those questions. And Joseph, you curated a mighty fine list, sir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's very easy when we have all sorts of awesome questions.
It is indeed, from our awesome supporters. And now to the power of the light side. This is a segment where we reach out to our Patreon supporters and ask them to share a story from their Star Wars fandom, from their Star Wars life, something they experienced, something they saw, a feeling they've had even now, then, forever. Doesn't matter. We want to focus on the light side of being a Star Wars fan. And Joseph, we got a great one today.
Yeah, that's right. Harrison says, I've been staring at this accursed blinking cursor for 20 minutes now, wondering which beloved thing I wanted to share. The morally brilliant character of Rose, sexy N1 starfighters. How about that weirdo alien that goes, okay, in The Rise of Skywalker? That last one has permanently imprinted in my brain. I don't think I'm capable of saying the word okay normally anymore. It's a real problem. I'm pretty sure my boss is a hair's breadth away from flinging me into the pit of Garkoon. So Harrison wrestles away, but he says, however, I've settled on simply sharing my latest damn I love Star Wars moment. The Rise of Skywalker novelization, in my opinion, masterfully written by Ray Carson, gave me many moments of joy. But the largest fist-bumping moment was something I had wanted in this final film since The Last Jedi faded from the cinema screen on my very first viewing of Episode 8. The roll call of heroes. I've been dreaming of a United Galactic fleet for 2 years straight, and here they were, 14,000 ships, one and all, refusing to allow darkness a safe bastion. The only issue I had with the film version of this magnificent event was its quickness. But Ray Carson took the time to give us a total of 6 clear callouts from other tales within the canon. I've never been one for needing canon to be interconnected, but the emotional canon of hearing the call sign Alphabet 2 30 years after the squadron was founded, or hearing Mark Thompson's excellent Vanessa Marshall Hera impression, will live on with all of my other little add-ins whenever I watch The Rise of Skywalker, right alongside my brief utterance of L3's rebellion as the Falcon swoops in, taking its place at the head of the fleet of just people. Huh. Just people. I wonder if it was intentional for both meanings of that first word to apply. Lots of great thoughts there. That is a great power of the light side. Totally agree that the fleet swooping in is one of the best moments of Rise of Skywalker. And it's made even more powerful in Ray Carson's novel with getting to hear all of those additional call-ins. I got teary reading that book.
Yeah, that's great, Harrison. And I'm with you, too, because I don't like that checklist. I don't need that checklist all the time, but it worked really well for me in the novel. And I get why it wouldn't be in the film. You know, I've liked to have seen, you know, I don't know, Christopher Sean as Kaz. Sure, absolutely would have worked for me. I would also had to explain it to a lot of friends and family members of what that meant. So, and we still even have to do that with Wedge. So, and I get, Harrison, that you along with us understand those realities, but emotionally, the impact, the journey, the 9 films all come into this moment, and especially I think the last 3 and the last 6, it works well in the novel, and I just love that scene, love that moment, and I think it's made up for the not having the people actually there, the roll call is made up for a little bit of just knowing they're there now and kind of always sensing that they're there. And now you can insert many people into that list. So we'll see, man. That's a beautiful one, though. Well written, Harrison. We appreciate that. We are almost out of here. We thank you all for listening today. If you have a question, you want to add something, join the conversation about this episode, you can do so by going to Twitter and following us at Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Force Center. Like our Facebook page, Force Center Podcast. Podcast is available in a lot of spots. iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn. And, of course, our home here is Anchor. We have merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And Joseph, we got stuff over at Patreon, and I even got an update on one of the goals we hit. So tell them where they can support us there. Yeah,
that's right. If you're interested in checking out everything we have to offer at Patreon, including access to a Discord server where we have a lot of friendly Star Wars conversation, you can read up on it all at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You don't have to enter the in the URL. It's just, you know, an option.
You can. And one of the goals was new music for Star Wars Ranked. And we have a lot of original theme songs. Almost all of our shows, I think, Ranked and Spotlight Star Wars, you know, we're the last few, the old guard of generic songs picked from a commercial bed factory, of commercial music bed. Tony Thaxton, we've talked, we confirmed, you know, a lot of you know, he was on the road recently touring drumming with his band. So he's just getting back to it. We've talked and we got some new music for Star Wars Ranked being worked on and on the way. And that is made possible. It really is from all of you that support us, like Joseph said, at patreon.com/ForceCenter. We have our own things working on, though, you know, it's a trying time to work on all of them, but we're getting it done. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to KenNapsok.com for information on that. And Joseph, they can follow you as well with your website.
Yeah, that is right. If you're interested in listening to my other podcast, Obsessed, that is still rolling on, doing episodes with my wonderful wife, Sarah. And then you can also find various comedy albums and all sorts of entertainment on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. And you can find me Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw.
Please do that. Follow him. Don't forget to follow Jennifer Landa as well. Go to her YouTube channel. Follow her on TikTok, an area I don't know about, Joseph, I'm not ready to enter into, but she's got TikTok down.
She's got it covered. We can just retweet Jennifer's TikToks.
There you go. I think that's possible. So thank you all again for listening, supporting us, getting through this tough time with us. We appreciate your patience with us recording remotely. Everything goes really smooth, but, you know, recording remotely, it creates sometimes some challenges, and we are happy to work through them for you. But we love your support during these times. So that is it. Thanks for all your questions. We'll see you next time. This was Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.